She walks in beauty, like the night of cloudless climes and starry skies, and all that's best of dark and bright meet in her aspect and her eyes, thus mellow to that tender light which heaven to gaudy day denies. One shade the more, one ray the less, had half impaired the nameless grace which waves in every raven tress, or softly lightens o'er her face, where thoughts serenely sweet express how pure, how dear their dwelling place. And on that cheek, and o'er that brow so soft, so calm, yet eloquent, the smiles that win, the tints that glow, but tell of days in goodness spent, a mind at peace with all below, a heart whose love is innocent. Hello, listeners. This is Professor Jonas Armitage, and you're listening to Stories from Dark Places. This week's poem, She Walks in Beauty, by Lord Byron himself. The story is The King in Yellow, by Robert Chamberlain. Having completed the repairer of reputations, we shall now be moving on to The Mask. But first, I feel obligated to comment on something, as is my prerogative in my platform. Yesterday was National Sexual Assault Victims Day. In April is known as the Sexual Assault Awareness Month, but what I did not manage to avoid learning about was the trend on social media calling it National Rape Day, and people going out of their way to make threatening videos and comments and jokes about how this would be the day where they should rise up en masse and force themselves on the female population. Allow me to say that as a person who lives in a town built of Lovecraftian horror, in a world of eldritch abominations, madness, National Rape Day is just fucking disgusting. And if you are the kind of person who thinks that that is a subject of humor, I implore you to seek psychological help. There is something deeply wrong with you, not in a humorous way, not in a horror movie protagonist or antagonist way, but in the fact that there is just something honestly broken about your mind. Rape isn't a joke. It's a disgusting act of violence which damages the victim emotionally, mentally, sometimes permanently. If you have been a victim, you understand that pain. If you haven't, you should be able to empathize. You should be able to consider horrors, be thoughtful of others, instead of being a fucking cock, making a joke about it. It's just disgusting. We shall get to our story right after these words from our sponsors.
Hi, this is Danielle from WZHP. When I'm looking for a comfortable place to take the whole family to eat dinner, but I don't want to break the bank, I go to Abby's. Serving the downtown Innsmouth area since 1957, Abby's is a rustic diner that specializes in American comfort food. Whether it's those deep-fried peanut butter and pickle sandwiches you saw in that diner food show, or niche northern cuisine like Alaskan skinheads, or even if you just want a hot slice of stargazy pie, Abby's has it all. Abby's, on the corner of Martins Avenue and 12th Street West. Show your membership to Marsh Hall and get a slice of stargazy pie a la mode on the house.
Although I knew nothing of chemistry, I listened, fascinated. He picked up an Easter lily, which Genevieve had brought that morning from Notre Dame, and plopped it into the basin. Instantly, the liquid lost its crystalline clearness. For a second, the lily was enveloped in a milk-white foam, which disappeared, leaving the fluid opalescent. Changing tints of orange and crimson played over the surface, and then what seemed to be a ray of pure sunlight struck through from the bottom where the lily was resting. At the same instant, he plunged his hand into the basin, drew out the flower. "There is no danger," he explained, "if you choose the right moment. That golden ray is the signal." He held the lily toward me, and I took it in my hand. It had turned to stone, to the purest marble. You see, he said, it is without a flaw. What sculptor could reproduce it? The marble was as white as snow, but in its depths the veins of the lily were tinged with palest azure, and a faint flush lingered deep in its heart. Don't ask me the reason for that, he smiled, noticing my wonder. I have no idea why the veins and heart are tinted, but they always are. Yesterday I tried one of Genevieve's goldfish. There it is. The fish looked as if it were sculpted from marble, but if you held it to the light, the stone was beautifully veined with a faint blue, and from somewhere within came a rosy light like the tint which slumbers in an opal. I looked into the basin once more. It seemed filled with clearest crystal. If I should touch it now? I demanded. I don't know, he replied, but you had better not try. There is one thing I'm curious about, I said, and that is where the ray of sunlight comes from. It looked like a sunbeam, true enough, he said. I don't know. It always comes when I immerse any living things. Perhaps, he continued, smiling, perhaps it is the vital spark of the creature escaping to the source from whence it came. I saw he was mocking, and threatened him with a mall stick, but he only laughed and changed the subject. Stay to lunch. Genevieve will be here directly. I saw her going to early mass, I said, and she looked as fresh and sweet as that lily before you destroyed it. Do you think I destroyed it? Said Boris gravely. Well, destroyed, preserved, how can we tell? We sat in the corner of a studio near the unfinished group of the Fates. He leaned back on the sofa, twirling a sculptor's chisel and squinting at his work. By the way, he said, I have finished pointing up that old academic Ariadna, and I suppose it will have to go to the salon. It's all I have ready this year, but after the success the Madonna brought me, I feel ashamed to send a thing like that. The Madonna, an exquisite marble for which Genevieve had sat, had been the sensation of last year's salon. I looked at the Ariadna. It was a magnificent piece of technical work, but I agreed with Boris that the world would expect something better of him than that. Still, it was impossible now to think of finishing in time for the salon, that splendid, terrible group half shrouded in the marble behind me. The Fates would have to wait. We were proud of Boris Yvain. We claimed him, and he claimed us on the strength of his having been born in America, although his father was French and his mother was a Russian. Everyone in the Beaux Arts called him Boris, and yet there were only two of us whom he addressed in that same familiar way, Jack Scott and myself. Perhaps my being in love with Genevieve had something to do with his affection for me. Not that it had ever been acknowledged between us. But after all was settled, and she had told me with tears in her eyes that it was Boris whom she loved, I went over to his house and congratulated him. The perfect cordiality of that interview did not deceive either of us, I always believed. Although, to one at least, it was a great comfort. I do not think he and Genevieve ever spoke of the matter together, but Boris knew. Genevieve was lovely. The Madonna-like purity of her face might have been inspired by the Sanctus in Gowan's Mass, but I was always glad when she changed that mood for what we called her April maneuvers. She was often as variable as an April day, in the morning grave, dignified, and sweet, at noon laughing, capricious, at evening whatever one least expected. I preferred her so rather than in that Madonna-like tranquility which stirred the depths of my heart. I was dreaming of Genevieve when he spoke again. What do you think of my discovery, Alec? I think it's wonderful. I shall make no use of it, you know, beyond satisfying my own curiosity so far as may be, and the secret will die with me. It would be rather a blow to sculpture, wouldn't it? We painters lose more than we ever gain by photography. Boris nodded, playing with the edge of the chisel. This new vicious discovery would corrupt the world of art. No, I shall never confide the secret to anyone, he said slowly. It would be hard to find anyone less informed about such phenomena than myself. But of course, I had heard of mineral springs so saturated with silica that the leaves and twigs which fell into them were turned to stone after a time. I dimly comprehended the process, how the silica replaced the vegetable matter atom by atom, and the result was a duplicate of the original object in stone. This, I confess, had never interested me greatly, and as for the ancient fossils thus produced, they disgusted me. Boris, it appeared, feeling curiosity instead of repugnance, had investigated the subject and accidentally stumbled on a solution which, attacking the immersed object with a ferocity unheard of, in a second did the work of years. This was all I could make out of the strange story he had just been telling me. He spoke again after a long silence. "I'm almost frightened when I think what I have found. Scientists would go mad over the discovery. It was so simple, too. It discovered itself. When I think of that formula and that new element precipitated in metallic scales." "Oh, what new element?" "Oh, I hadn't thought of naming it, and I don't believe I ever shall. There are enough precious metals now out in the world to cut throats over." I pricked up my ears. Have you struck gold, Boris?" "No, better. But see here, Alec," he laughed, starting up. "You and I have all we need in this world. Ah, how sinister and covetous you look already." I laughed too, and I told him I was devoured by the desires of gold and we had better talk of something else. So when Genevieve came shortly after, we had turned our backs on alchemy. Genevieve was dressed in silvery gray from head to foot. The light glinted along the soft curves of her fair hair as she turned her cheek to Boris. And then she saw me and returned my greeting. She had never before failed to blow me a kiss from the tips of her white fingers, and I promptly complained of the omission. She smiled and held out her hand, which dropped almost before it had touched mine. Then she said, looking at Boris, "You must ask Alec to stay for luncheon." This was also something new. She had always asked me herself until today. "I did," said Boris shortly. "And you said yes, I hope?" She turned to me with a charming, conventional smile. I might have been an acquaintance of the day before yesterday. I made her a low bow. "Je vais bien l'honneur, madame." But refusing to take up our usual bantering tone, she murmured a hospitable commonplace and disappeared. Boris and I looked at one another. "I had better go home, don't you think?" I asked. "Hanged if I know," he replied frankly. While we were discussing the advisability of my departure, Genevieve reappeared in the doorway without her bonnet. She was wonderfully beautiful, but her color was too deep and her lovely eyes too bright. She came straight up to me and took my arm. "Luncheon is ready. Was I cross, Alec? I thought I had a headache, but I haven't. Come here, Boris." And she slipped her other arm through his. "Alec knows that after you, there is no one in this world whom I like as well as I like him. So if he sometimes feels snubbed, it won't hurt him." "A la bonne heure," I cried. "Who says there are no thunderstorms in April?" "Are you ready?" chanted Boris. "Ah, madame. Aye, ready." And arm in arm, we raced into the dining room, scandalizing the servants. After all, we were not so much to blame. Genevieve was 18, Boris was 23, and I not quite 21. Quite. Unfortunately short, but still interesting. I wonder what sort of conflict will come into this Edwardian love triangle. I love stories of abstract fears and science gone awry. This sounds as if it has laid the groundwork for a wonderful story, and I hope you'll be joining me next week to hear the next installment of The Mask. But, as all good things must, it is the end of the night. We must go our separate ways. Tune in next week for more stories to entertain. Good night, listeners. And please remember, when you tuck yourself in at night, hear the creak, the foot of the stairs, the rustle, the closet, the shuffling, the bedclothes at the foot. Remember this. There's nothing to be afraid of. After all, some of the best things only happen in the dark.
Stories from Dark Places was recorded before an imaginary studio audience. All stories performed on this podcast have express written consent from the original author, Jonas Armitage, his studio manager, and the entire staff of WZHB Radio Innsmouth. Are fictitious characters, and it's probably for the best that you continue to believe that. Soul Crystal's not pure enough?
Spirit rain journals too smeared. Holy water looking murky. Then come to verboten knickknacks and collectibles, home of the largest collection of arcane artifacts, cursed objects, and unearthly articles since the Pines Cryptid Museum disappeared with the rest of Ashley, Kansas. Hi, this is Kai the Intern. I wanted to tell you that Verboten Knickknacks and Collectibles has everything you could ever want. Whether you're a disciple of the Mad Arab himself, or a curious teenager looking to summon your first Shoggoth. I just bought a new corpse candle last week and it still looks new! You'd never know I'd summoned the dead twice this week already! Verboten Knickknacks and Collectibles, where the only thing you can't find is a bloated price tag.